Welcome in, sports fans. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Got lots of fun things to talk to. We're going to start today, though, with a little bit of a local feel on today's shows. We're going to start Darren McDowell, selected in the Major League Baseball draft in the sixth round by the San Diego Padres. And this is big because not only Darren McDowell playing baseball at UWF, but he's from the Pensacola area, right? He's right down the road. He's a local guy, played his high school ball at Tate High School. He's a Tate Aggie. And, you know, he went on to play at UWF, put up fantastic numbers at UWF, decided to enter the Major League Baseball draft this year. And not only was he selected yesterday in that sixth round, I believe yesterday afternoon was when it happened, but he also became the highest D2 player drafted in the 2024 draft. So he was the first D2 player off the board for the Major League Baseball draft this year. He's also the 23rd player from UWF in their baseball program's history to be drafted by a Major League team. I think the last one, it's been a little bit of time since UWF has had a few years since they've had a player selected in the Major League Baseball draft. So another feather in their cap for that athletic department that just seems to keep growing and getting better and better with every day that goes by there at UWF. But also, he's the 12th player in the entire history of the Gulf South Conference to be taken within the first six rounds of the Major League Baseball draft. So congratulations, Darian McDowell, not only on getting drafted by the San Diego Padres, but, man, setting a lot of standards and records in doing so with, you know, being the 12th player from the Gulf South Conference, the highest D2 player taken in the 2024 MLB draft, the 23rd player from UWF in baseball history to be drafted. That's a lot of things that he can put on an already crowded trophy shelf. And he's going to do great in Major League Baseball, and definitely looking forward to following his career. So good luck, Darian McDowell. And I'm sure you probably just made a whole lot of new Padre fans here in Pensacola. Also, locally, Pensacola Ice Flyers, our very own Ice Flyers, they released their 2024-2025 season schedule. We kind of knew the dates, sort of the home games, but we didn't know who would be playing those games. Now we know who the Ice Flyers will be playing. They'll get it started October 19th by welcoming in the Huntsville Havoc to the Hangar. And then, of course, another notable game, December 28th. It'll be the first time the Peoria Rivermen make their trip down to the Hangar. Peoria, of course, one of Pensacola's biggest rivals inside the SPHL. And also just happens to be the team that eliminated them the last two seasons in the postseason. So definitely going to see an Ice Flyer team that is hungry and ready to win this year and ready to take that next step. Like I said, they've gotten to the postseason the last 2 years. They want to take that next step, get back to that President's Cup, and get another President's Cup number up there in the rafters. They've got quite a few, but they want to add another one. And I think you're going to see a hungry team that's going to be put in a good position to do that this year for the Ice Flyers. Definitely looking forward to that. Again, season gets started. First home game, October 19th, as your Pensacola Ice Flyers will take on the Huntsville Havoc. Continuing our coverage of SEC Media Days today as well, looking back to SEC Media Day 1, still no tiebreaker decision. Greg Sankey was talking about that, of what do we do if there's a tiebreaker at the top of the SEC? How do we kind of determine who's going to play for the conference championship? Still no word on how that's going to be decided, so we'll continue to have to wait and see. We are just about a month and away from the season starting, a month and a half away from the season starting, so definitely would hope that Greg Sankey can figure that out before it gets started, right? You definitely don't want that to be a halfway through the season. You come out and say, oh, by the way, this is how we're going to decide our tiebreaker in the situation that we need one. So hopefully we can have that in place and ready to go. So that was kind of the big thing I took away from what Greg Sankey said. Some funny things that happened from day one, or at least one funny thing happened from day one. Nick Saban is learning that he doesn't have people from the athletic department to help carry his stuff for him. He was actually denied when he first tried to enter into the media area, was denied entrance by security. Even though he's Nick Saban, they denied him entrance. Why? He did not have his press credentials, and Nick was talking about it on College Football, I believe it was College Football Live yesterday. You know, he was talking about it, and He said he went, he initially had one tie on, decided to change his tie. So because he had to change his tie and take it off, he took his credential off, set it on the bed in his hotel room there in Dallas, changed the tie, forgot to put the credential back on, left, went downstairs the minute he tried to enter the media area and go take the stage there with the SEC network. He was told, sir, you don't have a credential. You can't get in. Which, first of all, kudos to that security guard for sticking to your guns, no matter who it is. Because, I mean, clearly you look at him, you can tell it's Nick Saban, right? Everybody, if you know college football, you know who Nick Saban is. And if you live in the state of Texas, you know football, right? I mean, even if you're just a mild football fan in the state of Texas, you still know who Nick Saban is. So kudos to the security guard for basically being like, no, I don't care who you are. You don't have your credential. You can't get in, right? So kudos to him for that. But also at the same time, it's just wild. Imagine being the guy looking Nick Saban in the face as many times as you've seen him on SportsCenter and College Football Live yelling and just dog cussing players and coaches. You're going to look him in the eyes and tell him no. I would be so scared of Nick Saban that I would give him my credential, all right? I'd give him my credential, and if I was a security guard, I'd give him my security guard vest or whatever it was they were wearing and be like, you go wherever you want to, Coach Saban. I'm not going to – please don't A.J. McCarron me, right? Oh, man, who remembers that? The A.J. McCarron, they're playing Mississippi State. A.J. McCarron makes a bad decision, throws a pick, and Nick Saban just – not only is chewing him out on the way to the sideline, but just hauls off and spanks him, I guess is the best word to use for that. But I think it's funny that Nick Saban is learning. You're part of the media now. Or as I heard him call on this morning on SportsCenter, he's now a Disney cast member, which I thought was great because technically Disney owns ESPN and all of Disney employees are known as cast members. So Nick Saban is now a Disney cast member. And it's just funny because now I just picture Nick Saban writing It's a Small World with mouse ears on. And that makes me happy on so many different levels. Some other things taken away from day one. For LSU, yeah, the conversation, kind of like what we talked about yesterday. Don't overlook LSU. They're going to be a good football team. They're going to upset some people that they're expected to lose to. There's going to be some games, whether it may be against an Alabama or a Texas or a team of that caliber that we expect them to kind of drop that game, that they're probably actually going to win, and it's going to surprise some people. That team is definitely going to be a good football team. Brian Kelly talked about it yesterday. This is his third year at LSU. This is really kind of that year where a head coach has his guys in place. He's got the guys that are going to buy in and play the way he wants this team to be played. This team is going to be shaped the way he wants it to be shaped. And similar storylines right there to what we'll talk about on day three with Billy Napier. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. But as far as LSU goes, he's like, this team is holding each other more accountable than the other two teams I've coached at LSU have. They are holding each other accountable. They are taking accountability for what they do on the field and off the field. And he talked about the talent. He said, this is a talented team. We understand that we are being judged by winning championships. And to this point, we have not won a championship. We're not a success until we win a championship. So this team is hungry, and they're ready to go, and they've got the talent. Obviously, Garrett Nussmeier, the son of offensive coordinator Doug Nussmeier, is going to be at the quarterback position for them. So you're going to have a coach's kid who is very cerebral, understanding the game. It's a guy that is not going to be green, right? He's not going to be new. When you put him out there on the field, whether it's Tiger Stadium in front of 100,000-plus fans of his own team, or if you go on the road to a place like the Swamp or Neyland Stadium or, Bryant-Denny Stadium or wherever it may be, he's played in those venues before. As a matter of fact, he's played some in Bryant-Denny against Alabama. So it's not, it's not new to him. It's not a DJ Lagway at Florida or anybody like that that's a freshman that's never experienced it before, right? He's going to know what to expect. He's going to know how to prepare and be ready for it when he steps into those venues. So I think that is, you talk about the three most important things you need for a successful football team. You need a strong defensive line to get after the opposing quarterback. You need a strong offensive line to protect your quarterback. And then you need a solid quarterback that can control and dictate the pace of the game and your offense. And I think that's exactly what LSU has in Garrett Nussmeier. I think they've got a good guy there in the quarterback position. And it's definitely going to be interesting to see just how this season plays out for them. But again, if you're looking at LSU and you're like, I think they're only going to win like 7 or 8 games, you might want to rethink that. This team's going to be a lot better than some people expect them to be. Shane Beamer, he came out yesterday and kind of almost said the same thing about the championship thing that Brian Kelly said. It was about, you know, we're judged by winning championships. And it's not, that's not a wrong statement to make. It's a very true statement to make. But when you're 20-18 as a head coach at South Carolina, that is when you, I don't know if you should get out there and start talking about how for 2024, it's about winning championships for you, right? If you are 20-18 overall as a head coach, I wouldn't be bragging about this team is going to be competing and winning championships. Focus on actually just winning. Because if you're 20-18 as a head coach, you haven't been doing a lot of winning, right? It's been a lot of mediocre play. You're pretty much 500 as a coach. That's not good enough to keep a job in the Southeastern Conference. Even at a place like South Carolina or Vandy or somewhere like that, you're still not, that's not going to be good enough to keep a job. So what you need to do, if you are Shane Beamer, focus a little bit more on winning games, getting to a quality bowl game, taking that next step. That's that next step for them, right? I think Shane Beamer in his head, look, I know Shane Beamer is that fiery, energetic guy, you know, like we talked about on yesterday's show. He's got on the Vipers, and he's dancing, and he's having fun in the locker room with his players, and he's talking a little smack to opposing teams. But you got to understand where your team is at. And right now, this South Carolina team is not a team that can compete for championships. They're just not. So I really don't think that, you know, they're in a position to sit here and go, oh, well, you know what? We are a team that is that's ready to compete for a championship this year. No, you're really not. You're a team that needs to understand where you are, understand the next step for you to get to that point of competing for a championship. And right now, that's getting to an Outback Bowl. That's getting to a Citrus Bowl. You know, a bowl game like that, that is going to be a good opportunity for you to take that next step, help build a little bit of momentum, help you with recruiting a little bit, get some of those younger guys some extra practices once the regular season is over, and then you can start kind of moving more towards that whole, well, we're going to compete for a national championship. Just because it's 12-team playoff, and it will be a situation where there will be some SEC teams find their way into the college football playoff without winning the SEC championship, it doesn't automatically vault South Carolina to the top of that list. They're still down there hanging out kind of in that low middle of the pack area with teams like Florida, right? You got to take those next step. You got to take that next step of win 8 games, maybe 9 games, get to a quality bowl game. Then the following year, then you can talk about winning a championship. So I think for Shane Beamer, got to be careful. Don't count the eggs, or don't count the chickens before they hatch. Don't put the cart before the horse, all that good stuff. Pay attention, all right? Just pay attention to your team. Understand your team. Also, Lane Kiffin spoke yesterday for Ole Miss. Obviously, a little emotion there with Lane, his dad Monty Kiffin, just passing away a few days ago over the weekend. So definitely a tough time for him and his family, and he did a great job of paying a tribute to his dad and addressing that, and highly recommend if you had not gone and seen that, definitely go and watch it. It was definitely something to see. Day 2 coming up today. Got some heavy hitters hitting the podium. Definitely going to be lots of fun. As a matter of fact, we've got 4 teams that could legitimately be college football playoff teams for the SEC coming up this season, hitting the podium today. So we'll start it off. Obviously, Kirby Smart and Georgia, they've got to be the odds-on favorite to win the SEC right now. I know I saw earlier somebody had them picked to win, go 10-2. And I guess, yeah, I mean, that's not that crazy. I think in the last couple of seasons, it's usually been at worst 11-1. But I think with the addition of Oklahoma and Texas, it just makes it that much tougher and deeper in the SEC. So a 10-2 record, yeah, that's probably good enough to win you the conference and get you into the college football playoffs. So Carson Beck back at quarterback for them. That's going to be huge for them. A little familiarity, some continuity there heading into this season. And their defense is going to be, I mean, look, whenever you have Kirby Smart as your head coach, your defense is going to be lights out. So that is definitely going to be the bell cow for them this year. So definitely looking forward to just hearing what Kirby Smart has to say. I'm sure it's probably going to be the same old coach speak from Kirby. Nothing really too earth-shattering coming from him unless we hear something about maybe Carson Beck being suspended for the season because he got caught doing PEDs or something. I don't know. I doubt that happens. I know they have had some driving issues there in Athens with people getting arrested or, you know, getting pulled over for high rates of speed and things like that. So maybe that gets addressed. I don't know, but I think it's probably just going to be some typical coach speak from Kirby Smart. Josh Heupel, another guy that's going to be on the stage for Tennessee today. Tennessee is one of those teams that right now, if you asked me, is Tennessee a college football playoff team? No, they're not. They're not. Halfway through the season, that could easily be a different answer. Because they've got the quarterback in place, their defense is going to be, I talked about how Georgia's defense is going to be phenomenal and be lights out. Tennessee might have the best defense in the country, especially on that defensive line with a guy like Amari Thomas. Tennessee may have the best defense in the SEC. And whenever you have a defense, especially a defensive line, that's going to be as good as Tennessee's is this upcoming season, it's going to put you in positions to win games. Even if your offense is struggling, you're still going to be able to keep that other team close enough to where you're going to be in striking distance and have an opportunity to win football games. So I think Tennessee, you look at the way their schedule lines up, they get Florida at home. They get a couple of other big games at home. Definitely going to play in their favor this year. So, you know, who knows? A 9-3, 10-2 Tennessee team at the end of the season. If we see that, very well could be one of those teams that sneaks into the college football playoff spot and into the 12-team playoffs in one of those final spots without winning a conference championship. So it's very realistic for this Tennessee team. I think they've got the talent to do it, and Josh Heupel is a good coach, right? I think a lot of people have kind of overlooked Josh Heupel. I think when he was at UCF, there was a lot of noise and a lot of chatter around him. And now that he's gotten this Tennessee job, I feel like that's kind of backed off a little bit. But he's still a very, very good football coach who knows exactly how to run a team and run a program, especially inside a conference like the SEC. So watch out for the Volunteers this year as well. Brent Venables from Oklahoma. Definitely looking forward to seeing them at the podium. Obviously, the first SEC media day since joining the SEC. Really kind of interested to hear about how he plans on transitioning from the Big 12 to the SEC, because we talked about it before with teams like Oregon who are coming from the Pac-12 into the Big 10, right? You're coming from being a team in the Pac-12 who fast, incredible, just ridiculous speed on the offensive side of the ball. And you would score 60, 70, sometimes maybe even 80 points a game. Now you're going into the Big Ten where they're playing a lot tougher defense. It's kind of the same thing for Oklahoma and Texas. You've been in a conference where defense necessarily has not always been what you're known for inside that conference. Actually, it's quite the opposite. You're known for not playing defense. So now you're going to go into a conference that, like we talked about with the first two teams, Georgia going to have a good, solid defense. Tennessee might have the best defense in the SEC this year. You got Alabama. You've got all these other teams, LSU. Even LSU's defense, I expect them to take a giant step forward this season from what they were last year. I mean, you can't get worse for LSU defensively. They were one of the worst football teams defensively last year. So they can only move forward from there. So, and I expect them to. I think Florida is going to have a better defense. They've kind of shored up some depth issues and gotten some better talent in there. So especially with bringing guys like Cormani McClain back into the mix there. So I think Florida is going to have a better defense. So you're coming from a conference that don't play a lot of defense in. Now, all of a sudden, you're going to have to every week play these really tough, really strong defenses. How do you make that adjustment? How do you make that transition? And I think that really right there is why there's a lot of people that are saying, Oklahoma and Texas aren't ready for the SEC. Yes, they are. They are ready for the SEC. They have the talent and the competition and the competitive edge to play and compete in the SEC. But there is going to be a little bit of a learning curve and a transitional period of them getting used to playing that type of record or that type of schedule week in and week out, right? It is going to be a little tougher for them. Where in the Big 12, you might play, hey, you play Texas one weekend, that's a tough opponent. You know, and then you go and play somebody else the next weekend, maybe not as tough on defense, and you can put up 50, 60, 70 points, right? They're going to have to be ready for tough defenses each and every single week. Because we even talked about it yesterday when we were talking about Lee Clark for Vandy and how they were at the podium for day one as well. It's Vandy's, even with Vandy being Vandy, they're still going to give you a hard time defensively. They're still going to be a handful. It may only last for about a quarter and a half in the game, but they're still going to give you a handful, and it's still going to be a battle, and they're going to make it tough on you. You might beat them by four or five touchdowns, but they're still going to make it tough. They're still going to make you earn that four or five touchdown victory. It's not just going to be all wide open bombs down the field. So I think the interesting thing with not only Brent Venables in Oklahoma, but when Sark and Texas take to the stage in the podium too, what is going to be that conversation about the transition going from the Big 12 into the SEC? It's definitely looking forward to that. And then our final speaker today for the head coaches is going to be Eli Drinkwitz. Drink hitting the stage for Missouri. And, of course, they closed out the season last year, beating Ohio State 14-3 in the Cotton Bowl, probably arguably one of the most boring bowl games of the entire bowl season. But they got it done, won it 14-3, finished 11-2, ranked in the top 10. He's definitely got this team heading in the right direction. Kind of like what I talked about with Shane Beamer and how he's got to focus on the levels of, all right, we've got to get to this level. Now let's get to this level. Okay, now we can talk about this. Missouri did that with Eli Drinkwitz. They got to that 8-4 level. Then last year, they were 10-2 heading into the Cotton Bowl, beat Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl. Now they are in a position to where they can say, let's compete for a spot in the college football playoff and start talking about national championships. Eli Drinkwitz has done a great job. I know he's rubbed some people the wrong way with some things he said because he can kind of be outspoken. I think he's done a great job there with Missouri. Definitely looking forward to seeing what he has to say. I think Missouri kind of right there talked a little bit about Ole Miss yesterday and how they're one of those teams that I don't really expect them to compete for an SEC championship, but they can still find their way into the college football playoff. I think Mizzou is that next team on the list in the SEC. I think you've got three or four teams up at the top. I think obviously Alabama with Kalen DeBoer. I think Texas. I think Oklahoma, I think LSU, all our teams, and Georgia are all teams that can compete for an SEC championship and get that automatic bid into the college football playoff. Then that next level of teams behind them, and LSU is kind of a fringe team, right? They're kind of like a gray area between these two lists. But then that next group that's behind them are those teams that might not compete for an SEC championship, but could still get put into the college football playoffs now that there's 12 teams. I think the top two teams in that group are Ole Miss and Missouri. I really do think that both of those teams have a great opportunity ahead of them to where they could still get into the CFP even if they don't win the SEC championship. So we'll just have to see. But it's definitely going to be fun. And, of course, we'll have day three tomorrow. Several more coaches hitting the stage. We'll recap day two and look ahead to day three on tomorrow's Glass Half Full. But before we close today's show out, obviously I would be doing a disservice to myself and you as sports fans if I didn't talk about the Home Run Derby last night. Pete Alonso, the guy I said I thought was going to win. Look, I went with the Panda, all right? I went with the Panda, and I got burned. He got eliminated in the first round, so he took the night off, apparently. But Bobby Witt Jr. and Teoscar Hernandez really kind of saved a boring Home Run Derby with a great finale, didn't they? Like, it was not, and I know a lot of people, I'm seeing a lot of people on social media today talking about how it was the new rules, like the new rules and the new way of doing the Home Run Derby really kind of just made it uneventful and it wasn't quite as fun. But also at the same time, you know, that finale was pretty fun. And of course, Teoscar Hernandez taking home the Home Run Derby championship. And believe it or not, this was something that I heard that I thought, it surprised the heck out of me. He's the very first player from the LA Dodgers to ever take home that prize. So congratulations to him, and hopefully they can figure it out. I don't know. We'll see. There's a lot of things that Major League Baseball really needs to sit down and really take a long look into. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk about one of those coming up in just a second before we close out the show. But obviously, with the All-Star game yesterday, or not the All-Star game, but the Home Run Derby last night. We've got the All-Star game coming up tonight. You can listen to the All-Star game, by the way, right here on ESPN Pensacola 99.1. So be sure to tune in for that. If you're out and about and you can't get around a TV, you can at least tune in and listen to all the action for this year's All-Star game for Major League Baseball. All right, finally, closing out the show, like I said a while ago, Major League Baseball's got a lot of stuff they need to take a long look in the mirror about and try to fix on. Umpiring is a big issue with that, and I know a lot of people are wanting to go to the ABS system that I believe is actually being used in all the way up to AAA this year. So lots of people are wanting to look into bringing that into Major League Baseball, but Bryce Harper has actually come out and said, I like the human element, right? It does add to it. I do enjoy the human element, but the problem with that is we need to do a better job of regulating how that is gone about and done, which is easier said than done when you're talking about human element and really honestly and truthfully anything. But I think he made some great points. I think, you know, basically his thing was keep track of the umpires and their performance. You take the top umpires and you use them behind home plate more frequently. Right now, umpires are only really doing about one game a week. Have them do more games a week. Take those top umpires, and rather than having them do one game a week, have them do multiple games a week. And also pay them based off of their performance. If they are doing a good job and their calls are accurate and their calls are you know, as correct as a human element is going to get. Because, I mean, look, sometimes a human's going to make a wrong call. Sometimes. That's going to happen. It's, you know, to err is human, to R is pirate, all right? It's going to happen. So I think if you base their pay off of their performance, you're going to see a lot of Major League Baseball umpires suddenly start making more accurate, more consistent calls, right? That strike zone suddenly going to be the actual size of the strike zone, no matter who's at the plate. Because their paycheck is based on their performance, which I think is how it should be, right? I mean, in any job, your paycheck should be based on your performance. If you do a crappy job, you shouldn't get paid as much money as somebody who does a good job. And that's just how it is. So I think Bryce Harper's idea here of, A, paying umpires more based off of their performance, meaning if they do a better job, pay them more money, and then also having them ump more than one game a week. Have them do three or four, right? You can give them a day of rest in between. If these players have got to play in just about almost every night, these guys can get out there and umpire in just about every night. Don't tell me, oh, well, they've got all that gear on. Catchers have the same amount of gear on. Catchers also have to hit and run around the bases. So if that can happen on a nightly basis almost, I think umpires can get out there and ump more games than just one a week. And I think if we start using these better officials, these better umpires more and more, you're going to start to see those issues with umpiring in Major League Baseball start to slowly kind of disappear. So I think Bryce Harper might be onto something here. And who knows when his career is over and he's called it done and he's hanged up his cleats for good. Bryce Harper, Commissioner, Major League Baseball. I'm just saying with these ideas he's got my vote. That's going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Hey, you have a great Tuesday. I'll see you tomorrow.